Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Vet Story. I'm your host, Navy veteran Phil Briggs. Now we'll start this episode with the sounds of the trailer for America's top TV drama.
It's so strange, isn't it? How just like that, a complete stranger can become such a big part of your story.
All right, full disclosure, I am a fan of NBC's This Is Us. I've been watching the Pearson Gang now since season one, and every Tuesday night, my wife and I find a little time by ourselves to grab a box of Kleenex, curl up on the couch, and get emotional as we watch the stories unfold. And I started last year really noticing the veteran vibe when they covered the Vietnam aspect of Jack's service.
It's actually kind of terrifying, you know? How a single cross with one person you've never met can change everything.
Pearson, of course, the father figure on the show. And I was really amazed at how well they covered it. And it turns out that they've had some help from some military veterans. And last season, it was the acclaimed writer Tim O'Brien that helped them navigate the Vietnam episodes. This season, they're taking a look at the GWAT era, and they're looking at the Iraq-Afghanistan war and sharing some storylines about veterans. And they are getting some expert advice from our next guest, U.S. Marine veteran James Laporta. Also, see him writing for Newsweek and follow him on Twitter. James, glad to have you on the show, man.
I'm glad to be here. That was quite an introduction. Thank you.
Yeah, man. I was really glad to see your name pop up because I've been following you on Twitter, as I've told you. I love some of the stuff that you put out there. And it's really cool to me to know that you are, in fact, a legit warfighter. Because, you know, there's a lot of us in journalism, right? I mean, I'm one of them. You know, I've never seen the sandbox. I've never been on, the wrong end of a gun. I wouldn't even know what that's like. And you have some steep and deep experience. Tell me a little bit about where you were deployed.
Sure. I was deployed. I was a U.S. Marine infantryman. I deployed to the Southern Helmand Province of Afghanistan in 2009, and then went back in 2013. Southern Afghanistan is, unlike in the north of Afghanistan, you have more of the mountains and the Korangal and stuff like that. In the south, it's very agricultural. There's a lot of farming happening. It's very. I mean, there's a couple of mountains, but they're nothing major. You know, it's more just a lot of farming, a lot of growing poppy, which gets manufactured into heroin, and then a lot of marijuana fields. I've seen some quite large marijuana fields in Afghanistan. I mean, the size of like 3 or 4 football fields. I mean, it's pretty outrageous. And some of those plants, I didn't realize that. I mean, they can get up to 6 or 7 feet. I mean, they're pretty tall. So that's pretty much what Southern Afghanistan is, other than just being incredibly hot during the summers.
I've actually heard similar reports from a few of my friends that have served over there. And in fact, that was a running joke of a buddy of mine who, like some of your friends, made the ultimate sacrifice out there.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, man. But, that's one of the things we joked on. He was like, man, the weed plants are taller than anybody I know. It's 7-footers out there, man. Ronnie was always funny to point stuff like that out.
Yeah, there's this like one running joke that sort of goes on. Like when you're patrolling through those sort of fields, the running joke is like, I hope we don't get blown up because we might be too, we might be too high to fight back. like that was sort of the running it was sort of like an actual like worry, like, man, I hope we don't hit an IED or something. Cause I mean, it was said jokingly, but it was actually a real concern. There would be some times where they would burn the poppy and you would have the same effect. You had to sort of make sure that you weren't downwind, from those fumes,
Oh, that's so crazy.
I mean, it's bad enough that sometimes the Afghan army would sometimes, they would get high before going out on patrol. which you know, greatly concerned us, you know. And so, you know, we didn't want the other fighting force being us, being high as well, you know, even if it's on accident, you know.
But I mean, I knew there were a little bit different standards between us and the Afghan fighters, but I never would have guessed that, you know, you could blaze up while on patrol. That's wow.
I mean, I wouldn't recommend it.
Well, you know, for as long as they've been at war, James, maybe they need that to incentivize recruitment. All right. You know, I mean, they've been there. They've been fighting for 1,000 damn years over there. Okay.
It's the graveyard of empires.
Amen. All right. So, all right, let me just switch gears real quick because I'm dying to ask you this. I was a DINFOS trained killer. I went to the military to become a journalist, and I was a journalist in the military. You were an 11 Bang Bang. You were an 11 Bravo. How on earth did you end up with the journalistic chops to, one, be writing for huge publications like Newsweek, and then, two, you know, now you're advising TV networks like NBC on the hit show This Is Us? How did you end up going from infantryman to this?
By accident is the best way I can describe it.
Okay.
And I don't mean that flippantly. Like, I actually mean that by accident. I was in the Marine Corps for 8 years and was an infantryman that time. And in 2013, I had started working in the intelligence community, but I was still an infantryman by trade. And I was coming up on reenlistment. So this is the going into 2014, and in fiscal year 2014, you know, 14 was a little bit different. President Barack Obama was trying to end the war in Afghanistan. And so, you know, with trying to end any war, you're going to have a drawdown of forces because immediately you're going to have you're going to be over budgeted in terms of the troops that you have. And so I was trying to reenlist, and they kindly said, thank you for your service, but you're going to have to get out now.
Oh, really?
You know, I didn't do anything wrong. I essentially, in civilian terms, I got laid off is what happened. And so I basically, you know, had a month or two to completely check out of the Marine Corps and figure out what I was going to do in life. So the journalism thing, being, you know, working in the intelligence community, you learn to write a lot.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Sort of we're constantly just writing.
Oh my gosh. And fit and, reps, sit reps, everything has a rep. Everything has a damn report. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. And so everything has to be sourced, you know, in terms of like where this piece of information came from, where that. And so I was like, well, maybe I can just do journalism until I figure out what I want to do. It was one of those also things where it's like, I knew I wanted to say something, but I wasn't ready to like deal with my own sort of issues with, you know, war and losing friends in war. Mm-hmm. And so my thought process was I'll write about other people. It wasn't so much like what journalism is. Journalism is designed to keep, you know, the American public informed. That wasn't my main thrust at the beginning. My main thrust was, I feel like I need to write something. I don't know what I'm going to write. And I don't know, I don't want to write about myself, but I've always been told, you know, write what you know. And so I know the military. And so I just started writing about other people's experiences. And that's sort of how I got into journalism. Wrote a lot of emails saying, hey, I'll work for free, you know.
Well, that'll get you a job in the media.
Yeah. So that's what I did. For almost a year after the military, I worked for free. I didn't earn any money.
Oh, man.
And you know, I considered it, you know, sort of honing my chops, you know.
Yeah.
And then started writing I started freelancing for the Washington Post and freelancing for the Daily Beast. And 4 years later, I got hired by Newsweek. And just like you, I am a fan of This Is Us. From the very beginning, I was a fan. And I also took note that they had started to go into the veteran experience. And I had the same thought that you had, which was, wow, they're doing a really good job, you know, and I wonder if there's a story there. And there, it turned out there was. They had hired Tim O'Brien, who probably wrote one of the best books to come out of Vietnam, which was The Things They Carried. I mean, it was nominated for the Pulitzer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just why they were so good. I mean, that's the down and dirty. In terms of how I got hired to consult, it's actually a little bit of an embarrassing story. It's embarrassing for me in terms of being a professional journalist now. I was about to interview Dan Fogelman, the creator of This Is Us, and Tim O'Brien on the phone. And in about an hour before I got on the phone, I had received word that a Marine that I had served with had taken their own life. And so I get on the phone an hour later with them to essentially talk about war in Vietnam and what it's like to come home from the war. And I'll be honest, I completely broke down. I mean, I just couldn't hold it in anymore, you know? And I sort of went into very much an apology mode because, you know, my job is to interview them.
Yeah.
Not to start breaking down and becoming emotional, you know? And so it was really embarrassing. I felt really bad about it. I kept kicking myself for being unprofessional. And I mean, NBC and This Is Us could probably tell you, I started sending tons of emails just trying to apologize. And I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was Dan Fogelman reached out and was like, dude, you're being too hard on yourself. Like you're only human, you know, like it's not a big deal. You know, they were really gracious about it. Stayed in touch and he said, you know, if you're ever in California, I'd love to bring you by the set and, you know, let you look at the sets and all that kind of stuff. And so I was out and I had went out to California to investigate a different story and was just close by. And I said, hey, I'm in California. And he's like, oh, come by Paramount Studios. And
so cool.
I remember asking, like, I was like, do I just walk in or like, how does this, you know, I don't know anything about Hollywood, you know, I didn't know how the whole thing worked. I was like, is there like a guy that I talked to? You know, I didn't even know even how to just even go about asking like, I'm here to see this, you know, Dan Fogelman. And so he was like, so he showed me around the sets and he showed me the editing bays and he stopped and said, I would love to have you talk to the staff writers for about 15 minutes. And what was only supposed to be 15 minutes turned into a 2-hour long conversation. And it was a long 2 hours. It was almost like, I felt like I was in a therapy session in terms of, you know, sort of laying out my life story. And then it was not long after that where Dan was like, we want to hire you.
Wow.
To start working on season 4. So, I mean, when I say it was an accident, it really is an accident, or at least it feels like it's been a big accident.
Thank you for sharing that, brother, because that is highly personal. Here, when you said it was a little bit embarrassing, I thought it might involve like, you know, just some kind of humorous anecdote from a cocktail party where you met somebody and, you know, did something. But gosh, that is just so touching. And it really shows in how the first episode kind of unfolded. It was done with such incredible detail. You could tell that there was a real warfighter. There's a real GWAT veteran kind of behind it from the very beginning with the way she's on the phone in, those buildings that are erected out of just 2x4s and plywood to the way that everybody was seated in the Humvee and the way that they were all wearing their gear. You know, I mean, everything looked legit. There was
the reason for that. I mean, it's not to cut you off. But
no, please.
You just brought something up that I haven't said yet. But the reason why especially like where she was with the plywood, the reason why that looked so real is I had taken photographs of what my room looked like in Afghanistan, and so they took my photographs and literally recreated what my room looked like in Afghanistan. So the room that she's sitting in. It is almost an exact replica of what my tent looked like in 2013. All the patches on the wall are mine. All the things that are on the desk, you know, she has a map there. She has a couple of publications. All the patches in the background, even letters that I received while deployed. Those are all mine. And so, I mean, just the level of detail that they went to, that was one of the most surreal moments I've ever had, was walking into that room where she's going to call her husband over Skype. Cause I was like, oh my God, I'm back in my tent in Afghanistan. It was very, very surreal. And just the level of detail that they went into to get all that right, was pretty incredible.
That's so cool. And it's so good to hear too, because like you and I both are, you know, we're both veterans. And when we watch some of these shows, you know, it's always, he's a veterinarian Navy SEAL Green Beret that's being chased by the CIA and is doing surgery on dogs in an airplane. And
right.
It's really never anything like that, you know?
Exactly. It's war is incredibly boring. And then you have moments of sheer craziness and chaos. And then it goes boring again, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that war is in the moments between boredom and sheer chaos it can take a toll, you know? But no, I mean, basically from the moment we started having our first conversations of what Cassidy Sharp was going to look like and what the character was going to be and they really wanted to get it right. So even before we started filming, I wrote like a 30-page sort of like Bible on how to get everything right. And what I didn't know is that they had been doing their own research and had become just as obsessive as I was to get everything right. You know, a detail that I talked about the other day was even the in Afghanistan, the males they'll sometimes dye their beards red. If you look at that first episode and look at the Afghans, the Afghan males, you can see that their beards are dyed red. I mean, that's a very, very specific detail that even without that detail, it would have still been fine. But I mean, just that's the level of detail that they put into it. And then everything in that first episode, I can tell you exactly where it comes from. So everything is either a true story or comes from an actual fact or comes from an actual statistic.
Right on. Let's dive into just a couple of those real quick. You know, I've watched the show for a couple seasons, and then this first episode, it's all these new characters. I'm like, who's this woman? And she's a Marine, and she's coming home to see her family. But, you know, they start in the sandbox, and she's over there in Afghanistan. What's going on? And what I loved were some of the storylines that I actually saw from you on Twitter. Let's start with her name. Jennifer Morrison's character's name is?
Cassidy Sharp.
And Sharp comes from a real world or a real person's experience that you know about. Share with me that.
So Cassidy was the name that Dan had come up with. And at some point, you know, I just sort of asked, like, hey, can we give her the last name Sharp? Which is an homage to someone I served with on my first day in combat. So Lance Corporal Charles Seth Sharp of Adairsville, Georgia, died on my first day in combat. Which is July 2nd, 2009. And so I wanted to pay a small homage to him. And what I did realize is getting a character named is actually not an easy thing. I didn't realize that even fictional names have to be approved, you know? You know, that's why you don't have like two Bruce Waynes, you know? Bruce Wayne is Batman, and that's trademarked, you know? So I thought, you know, just throw out a name. You know, I didn't realize that there's a lot more to it than that. And so when the name got approved, I mean, it really meant the world, you know, to have that, her name that. There's actually another character. The character that she speaks to in that first episode is Sergeant Lasher. Sergeant Lasher is another guy who I served with in 2009 who died on that deployment. His name is Lance Corporal Jeremy Lasher. So I started, you know, recommending or writing in just these little homages to people that I knew or that had served in combat and died, just as, you know, little tip of the hat to them and their service and their sacrifice.
I loved it. I loved it. And I loved even more because, again, I'd watched the episode and then I see you on Twitter and I'm like, oh, I just wish I could do kind of a sort of after action podcast after every episode that follows the GWAT journey and follows her character, because I know that there's so many things that I don't even know about that I'm witnessing. I'll give you a tip of the cap on one thing I did witness, and that's how I knew you were a real Marine. Because your one line of dialogue, I don't know if you saw me on Twitter, I actually screen capped it when I saw your face on camera on the episode, and you're one of the Marines posting up guard outside of this room or outside of this house where Jennifer Morrison's character Cassidy is like interrogating someone, and they go into this house to get right. This intel, and she's been in there for like, you know, 5 minutes, and the guys outside on watch are getting really stressed out because you're supposed to be getting out of that village because it's, you know, you don't want to be in the village for too long because Marines turn into targets. And I loved your line. There's a dog barking off in the distance and you're like, if that dog keeps barking, I'm going to shoot it. And I just was right. Like, that's exactly what I would expect to come out of every Marine I know's mouth. You guys are salty. You guys got kind of sour attitudes. You're tough. I loved it. I love the realism and the grit that character displayed right there. And then, of course, the gunny that yells at you or your sergeant, your first sergeant, whatever he was right there. You're not going to shoot anything, Marine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of realism in that scene. I mean, one, in Afghanistan, we had to actually shoot dogs. It wasn't because we wanted to. It was because that they were barking and giving away our position.
Oh, shit.
And so that's an actual real thing. So that, like I said, everything in that first episode, I can tell you exactly where it comes from, and it comes from real life. So that's a real thing. So again, it wasn't that we wanted to, and luckily I actually never had to, But it was always from a point of, it's giving away our position. It's going to, you know, sort of alert the local Taliban. And actually, the actor who plays Sergeant Lasher, Rich Paul, is actually a former Marine himself, too. So there was, and actually all the background extras who played Marines are former military, either, you know, Navy, a couple guys from the Army, former Marines. So there's a lot of veterans working on that set, which was just awesome to see.
So cool. Well, let's just wrap it up here real quick and say, who have been some of your favorite characters to meet? Let me see. Is Mandy Moore as nice in person as she seems? Is Sterling Brown as funny and quirky as he seems? Is Justin Hartley, the youngest brother, Kevin, is he really as handsome as he seems? And, you know, Jack Pearson, man, is that guy just like do women just swoon when he walks by? Mila Ventimiglia. I mean, I just...
I'll go down the list. So I'll share one anecdote about... Mandy Moore is exactly who you would think in real life. She's a very genuine person, very down-to-earth and humble. An interesting fact that I brought up to her is I grew up in Orlando, Florida, which is where she grew up as well.
Huh.
And at one point, we went to the same acting school at different times. It was called Lisa Maley Modeling and Acting. And obviously, obviously she was very successful in both, and I didn't go off into either. I went to the Marines, and it was mostly just a school that, you know, it was mostly something to do between, like, you know, football and baseball, you know, season or whatever.
Sweet.
But different times, you know. So I remember growing up, or because she was a couple of classes ahead of me, or I think she might have already graduated. But I remember seeing her very first headshot up on the wall, and I remember bringing that up, and she's like, "Oh my God!" You know. So there was actually already a weird sort of like 6 degrees to Kevin Bacon sort of connection.
Right.
Sterling K. Brown, I did not get to meet, unfortunately. I really wanted to, only because I used to be stationed in Parris Island in South Carolina. And in Charleston, South Carolina, they used to film Army Wives, which is a show that he was on. They were like filming downtown or something. I think we walked through one of their scenes, or people were like walking through their scenes. So like they had real good security. So they had to, like, you know, I think we messed up like one of their shots or something like that. But it was,
trip. You were destined to pull a cameo in a TV show. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
All these weird connections. I met Kevin briefly. It was very, he was working at the time, you know, but I told him I was working in the writing room. And I said, it's like a therapy session. He's like, oh, well, that's why they have all the tissues. You know, they have like these little tissue boxes everywhere around. Cause I mean, not only does This Is Us make the fans cry, I mean, there are people, it makes the people who make it cry.
That's awesome. That's a fun
fact.
And
then Milo, he really listens intently. Anytime there's a veteran or someone who served in the military, like, he will stop and just really just pay attention to their story. Really just genuine guy and really sort of cares. And I think that's in part because, you know, he's the son of a Vietnam veteran, you know, and so just really has a heart for those two communities.
That is so cool to hear, because I spent a career in rock radio when I got out of the Navy myself. And I'm here to say that, like, rock bands also are exactly who you think they are sometimes. And that's not always a nice thing, you know? I mean, like, drunk and crazy is no way to go through life. It is so nice to hear that the tissues, that the scenes, that the connection they're making to the words that they're reading is that real, and that these people behind these characters are just such sweet, awesome people. And it makes me want to watch the show. This Is Us, NBC. I'm almost proud to say that I watch it, and it doesn't sound like anything, you know, this toxic masculinity kind of guy would want to watch, but they're just such damn cool stories. And behind the scenes, James LaPorta at Newsweek magazine, writer, Marine, you were helping making these scenes come to life. Is there anything you can share with me coming up now?
The first Pearson family member she meets is Nikki Pearson, because he threw a chair through the window and she's staring at him.
Oh, that's
right. So that's
right.
All I can say.
So, okay, so I can't get anything out of episode 3 from you.
That's the only, you know, I mean, that is the intelligence as we have it at the moment. In terms of future intelligence, I can either confirm or deny anything.
Well, you know what that means, Mr. Signal Intelligence. You know what that means. I'm going to have you back, and we're going to have to do another This Is Us recap from behind the scenes after the next episode airs.
I can't wait for everyone to see the rest of the season, but no spoilers from me. It's actually, and believe me, let me say something about the spoilers. You don't want to know ahead of time.
Right.
I say this as a fan. So I started as a fan of the show, and now I know secrets, and I wish I didn't know them. You know?
Right,
because
right.
I like finding out, like last night's episode, or the last episode two, I didn't know much about that episode, and I liked it. I liked finding out what the story was, just like the rest of the audience watching. So it's actually, I know it's sort of people like to know, but it's better if you don't.
Well, that's awesome, brother. And
take on spoilers.
I tell you one thing that's really evident is it's really cool to watch it and then unpack it with you and learn about all the little things that went on in the episode I just saw from behind the scenes and from the writer's room. So I really appreciate you, man. James Laporta, I've been a fan. I'm glad I finally tracked you down and we did this. Let's do it again really soon as this season unfolds. NBC, This Is Us.
Absolutely.
Be well. I will look forward to seeing you. You got any more cameos? Can I know that? Do I get to see your face on screen again this season?
I can neither confirm or deny.
Nothing. I love it. James, great to talk to you, man.
All right. Great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.